verdict in the Derek Chauvin trial this week, called a giant step forward in the march towards justice in America by President Joe Biden. But just how do we see that march continue? Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. US of Ed out every week wherever you find good podcasts. And check out the new podcast as well, Pacific Conversations, featuring Ed and myself and producer Tina Quinn, engaged in conversations with leading political thinkers regarding the relationship between the United States and Australia and the kind of politics that both separate us and draw us together. Former police officer Derek Chauvin found guilty on counts of both murder and manslaughter over the killing of George Floyd. The quick decision of the jury, many are crediting, of course, to that damning video which showed Chauvin kneeling on Floyd's neck for a good 9 minutes until he became unresponsive. Ed, first thoughts on this one?
Well, he was convicted, not by that video, although that was an important element, but the notoriety that preceded the events. And the events that preceded it were other Blacks were killed for various reasons. And the timing was awful for Minneapolis, for Chauvin, for everyone. He will be remembered for a very long time, not for the life he led, but for the life he gave, so other people may live better lives. And I hope that 9-minute video is shown to every police department in the world, because the loss of life can never be condoned by police attempting to reduce a person's ability to fight. I think this was a wake-up call for the police around the world in all the big cities. And so Minneapolis and the United States were on trial. There was jubilation at the end, but that end is a beginning. And I think Biden sees that as the open door to do two things. Start working on guns, but start working on guns not through new legislation that can have holes in it. Take away the exemptions of the gun manufacturers from being sued for the damage that occurred by a person using their gun. Now, clearly, these will be spectacular trials, but the manufacturers will very quickly get the message that no one's going to insure them if those guns get into the wrong hands. The second thing is states are going to start lifting their game. Every case, including the recent Chicago case, the person got a gun who shouldn't have gotten a gun. And the states are going to start holding people who sell guns or transfer guns responsible for the actions that occur with those guns. That can be state law. And I think those things will work. A national attempt to deal with something like the Second Amendment won't work now. But I think once the mothers get involved, it will be huge momentum for the transformation of America's outrageous gun problem.
I just want to go back and focus on something you mentioned there a moment ago, though, Ed. Jubilation, the word jubilation, because I think the thing that is kind of most striking to me about the coverage and will be most striking, I think, to a lot of white people around the world is those scenes of celebration after the verdict made it to the streets. I mean, it's like, you know, you've got a guy literally choking the life out of another man on video for 9 minutes, undeniable proof, and yet Black Americans were so uncertain of what that outcome would be. There was that outpouring of jubilation, celebration, once the verdict was actually confirmed and justice was served. I think that is sort of waking a lot of people up to the reality that Black Americans do live in a very different world from a lot of them.
That's absolutely right. And when that verdict came in, I thought of my teenage years until I moved to Australia. And my parents and grandparents taught me that every day was dangerous, that I had no days, no times that I could take for granted. Because anyone who was white and wore a badge or a uniform could take me out. That is a heavy burden. And every African-American has to tell his or her children or grandchildren that the law is not on their side. If that could change, there would be real jubilation.
And before we move off this, Congresswoman Maxine Waters found herself in potentially hot water with comments she had made, saying protesters had to stay in the street and demand justice if the jury acquitted Charvin. The judge overseeing the trial before the verdict did see that this could be grounds to appeal the verdict. Any thoughts on this one?
I don't say where the judge said that. Had she said, well, if this verdict comes out the right way, you should still be angry. She was just voicing an opinion. Is her opinion more important than mine on this radio show? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Now, the judge will get himself in hot water here when it goes on appeal over something like this, because the chances of getting a new trial here are very, very slim. But the chances of the judge being reprimanded for having said something like this could be high. Mm. Maxine Waters is just another person, just like Donald Trump said very similar things, and he was not admonished. I think you're stepping into stepping into quicksand.
In other news this week, Biden is set to reveal a new pledge on greenhouse gas emissions, aiming to cut emissions by at least 50% by 2030. Ed, how do you see this one playing out?
Well, it's behind California. California's going to do it by 2025. You cannot drive a vehicle in California, I believe, in 2025 that is powered by diesel or ethyl fuels. So the momentum again is there. And the United States is not doing anything spectacular, particularly interesting, but there's a strong momentum now to deal with this issue. And COVID has given us another opportunity here by redesigning cities so they're more flexible. The automobile doesn't have to be the only way you can move around. Mm. And people also will not have to move long distances for work. I suspect many big firms will be setting up hubs in the next tier of cities. For us, it'd be in Newcastle. Why have workers or Wollongong traveling 100 kilometers for 2 or 3 hours to do 4 or 5 hours of work? They've learned that it's cheaper, better, and more efficient to keep where they are. So this can be the revitalization of a lot of smaller cities and the reduction of automobile movements long haul. I'm looking forward to it.
I am curious, though, what kind of impact the United States can have with this pledge. As you say, it's not necessarily unique, but the Biden administration looking to have this sort of gathering of 40 countries and talk again about cuts to emissions. It's just that the states have lost so much ground, so much respect on this issue under Trump. Is this a pledge that the other countries can take seriously?
Well, the other countries are going to move on their own. They've been out in front of the United States. All of Europe has. been, and the United States has been out of step. The U.S. is just catching up here. The U.S. will not be the leader in this. It'll be the European Union and Great Britain. But don't be surprised if China doesn't come up very, very fast in this. China is now the second or third largest user of coal. Much of that is to make steel. But as they find new techniques for doing that, that will go down. And I think we'll find China very willing to reduce its emissions just to keep down its costs. So I think this is going to be a good one for everybody. Mm. And the United States is going to be a member of the pack, not the leader of the pack.
Yeah, I think people need to remember, although China may be consuming an awful amount of coal right now, when China sets its mind to do something, it tends to do it pretty fast.
Thank goodness.
Look, an interesting story on this one as well. The United Mine Workers, the United Mine Workers Union in the States, have said this week they support the Biden Green Energy Plan, provided, of course, it includes a solid transition plan, including funds for retraining former miners and giving them a pathway to decent jobs in the renewable energy sector. Now, Ed, this is one I've thought is a pretty common sense approach for us here in Australia for some time, and yet we haven't seen it happen. Any ideas on how this might work?
When I came to Australia the very first time, Wollongong was closing and Newcastle were closing their steel mills. And I worked for over a year coming up with strategies first to use the coal for making richer, better steel that was higher quality and therefore other people would need it, and new products. And some of those new products are out. I won't advertise them on the air, but we are now leaders in some steel products that use far less energy to produce. I think that's the direction the United States will be going in. And the old steel mill, where your back was the most important thing, is not going to be true in the near future. Your nimble brain is going to be the pivot point for steel making, for making of many things. The American labor unions have gone to Northern Europe, particularly to Sweden, Norway, and other countries, and seen their unions in the participation of this form of new output. So again, the United States is a follower here, but they know the old bandwagon and say, we're going to hold you up, will not work. The rest of the world is producing better, faster, cheaper steel. So hanging on to coal, hanging on to other natural resources is not going to work. But coming out the smart way will work. Furthermore, the United States doesn't have very many coal workers anymore. Young people don't want to go into those enterprises. And if those towns are to survive, it'll be the combination of getting things moving out of the city, if they're a decent town, into these communities using the internet as a way of serving the workforce. And the other thing is getting into the technology space. The United States is one of the few places where that can be done relatively quickly, because the logistics in the United States are so good with autos, with trains, and everything else. So I think the auto workers and other workers see the day when their guys will be going to work in blue collars and not overalls.
It is interesting because, of course, it does follow on from a report we didn't end up discussing last week, but I mentioned to you last week, of course, about some are saying around Washington, D.C. that COVID has been particularly good for the knowledge industry, that although obviously the economy is suffering, there's been a boom in the likes of biotech and data center industries.
There has been. The interesting thing about this is the traditional route to those industries is not the same as the traditional route to the old manufacturing industry. The MBA, learning management skills. Now a person with a degree in music is more likely to be successful than a person with a degree in business, because the skills you develop in music, the lateral thinking skills, and the assembly skills are what the new industries need. So I think we're going to find a new form of education, and I'm participating a little bit, where students with different kinds of intellectual skills can contribute to the fabrication. And I mean fabrication in a new way, that is putting together things to solve problems where the architects, engineers, and others, that will be the new set of skills. I don't think the degree is going to be as important as the skill set.
And just, of course, we did mention COVID right there. The U.S. has reached its stated goal of 200 million vaccinations in 100 days. Those are happy days, Ed, although there is still not a insignificant portion of the country that claims an ongoing refusal to get the jab. Any thoughts?
Well, one interesting one that I learned on the tennis courts today is a pill has been developed with the same effectiveness as the jab. So you're going to be anti-pill? I think that's that may be a game changer. You don't have to rock up to a big center. It's kind of like going in and buying your cannabis. You've got a prescription, you know, and you get your prescription for diabetes and another pill over here for COVID, and your neighbors aren't going to know. I think that's what's coming.
Russia, we see further massing of troops on the Ukrainian border, and this week uproar over the treatment of opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Mass protests in Russia have seen 1,500 arrests, and there have been threats of U.S. sanctions if he isn't given proper medical treatment. What's going on, Ed?
Well, he's been moved to a hospital. He's still refusing to eat, but they can feed him through tubes. Now, all of a sudden, it's important for the Russians for him to live, because they'll be blamed if he dies. I hope Navalny is the spearhead of a movement and not a one-time act. I hope he's the Martin Luther King of the Soviet Union and brings it to its heels with respect to this totalitarian rulership that has had since Khrushchev. When Khrushchev left, he left a semi-democratic nation, and it's gone backward ever since with respect to its leadership. There are other things that are working well in Russia, and the true sign of things working well are these demonstrations. The people in those demonstrations are not in rags. They're obviously engineers, lawyers, doctors. That's where a revolution really comes, and that's scaring the bejesus out of Putin. He's afraid that even some of the people who were surrounding him have joined that revolution.
And an exchange of missiles between Israel and Syria, with a missile launched from Syria striking the desert not far from Israel's top secret nuclear reactor. The Israeli response hitting back at the missile launcher and other targets in Syria. The most serious violence between the two nations in years, and with likely Iranian involvement. Why now, Ed?
This is a strange one. The Iranians have nothing to gain by this. More quiet since, as we've quoted Sheng Shu many times, when the enemy is disarranged, don't attack them, let them pull themselves down. And Israel is disarranged. They cannot get their act together. Their current leader may be in jail. It's hard to tell. If you look at the last election, if the Muslims join one of the right-wing parties that has enough votes, and it's hard to see how this coalition could be made, but it's possible, just to get rid of him, there'd be a new government in place, but it probably wouldn't be a very hearty or stable government for very long. So Israel politically is in a weak position. Why attack them now?
And just finally, this week saw Prince Philip laid to rest over in the UK, the Queen's longtime companion. A lot of focus on the tensions between family members during the funeral, though, Ed. Anything to add?
Well, I want to go back to my observations earlier. This is important to some people in the Commonwealth, but for the rest of the world, it is not important. And that's not to say he wasn't a nice man, a decent man, but his profile was relatively narrow, and it still is narrow. I think the tensions in the family are there, will be there. If Charles becomes king, or I should say when, they'll be magnified. The real question is, how long can this monarchy be the kind of monarchy it is? Or will it have to become a Scandinavian monarchy where the monarch lives in a common house, does common things, and shows up at a few events, but has to have a job full time to make it work? We may be headed in that direction, but I'm clearly a Republican.
Ed and I will be back next week to talk all the latest in US news and politics. Subscribe wherever you might find the podcast. Drop us a review if you're feeling generous. And check out the new podcast as well, Pacific Conversations.